you turn age 65, the tax code changes. When you start Social Security, it changes again. Today, we dig into taxes in retirement, and we suggest some simple ways to create tax efficiency. Stump the Guru returns today. We start right now.
And now, Money Matters USA with Fred Sage.
And you also need to work with your advisor to create multiple income streams.
You're at the right place for information every week regarding all the components of a successful retirement plan.
Asset allocation is really a driving force for how much your accounts are going to grow.
Fred Sade is a financial fiduciary and retirement specialist.
I have to put the client's interest ahead of my own pocketbook at all times. I must be able to justify why I'm making the recommendations.
Money Matters USA with Fred Sade. Fred Sade.
We're going to open up with taxes here because, taxes, it's on our minds now. It is tax season, and Fred's area of focus in the retirement universe is retirement. So we're going to look at taxes in retirement. Money Matters USA, episode 135 with Fred Sade, founder and managing director of his firm, Money Matters USA. Fred, a fiduciary, holding a PhD in economics from Duke University, and again, focusing on retirement. So, Fred, here's the big question.
Yeah.
And I think I know the answer.
Uh-oh.
Is retirement income taxable?
Can be. No such thing as a free lunch.
Right.
Most of the sources of retirement income, if you have a pension, it's going to be taxable. 401k, 457s, 403bs, they're all going to be taxable. Simple IRA. Everything of that kind is going to be taxable. Annuities will have taxation. Just about anything with a handful of exceptions. Distributions from Roths are not taxable, provided they have been cured for more than 5 years. Loans are never taxable, whether they come from life insurance or some other source, a drawer against income of some other sort. It could be salary, it could be commissions. Those are not going to be taxable. Qualified disability benefits, qualified long-term care benefits are not going to be taxable. There are some other sources, but that becomes very sophisticated where you're getting into trust planning and annuity trust planning. So leaving those sophisticated sources aside, what I just indicated, those are the most likely suspects to either be taxed or not to be taxed.
And it's a lot that is to be taxed in retirement. We'll cover a couple of things that aren't, but let's start with this. What's the formula for how Social Security could be taxed, the benefits?
Well, there's two threshold levels. So 50% and there's an 85% threshold level. Unfortunately, these levels were never adjusted for inflation. So they were set during the Reagan administration. And I guess some bright guy or gal on a Sunday afternoon had nothing to do. Hmm. And they figured out how Social Security could be taxed. And basically the idea was to tax the 50% that was contributed by the employer. And so that was never taxed, so why not tax it? Well, that was the justification, but it's never been adjusted for inflation. It's really unfair. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in the initial draft adjusted and brought it forward for inflation. There were some considerations in Congress also to do that. It's really unfair not to still be stuck with very low thresholds. I mean, $25,000 and $32,000, depending on whether you're single or married. And there's a phrase in the tax code called provisional income. And there's no one definition of what constitutes provisional income. It just depends on how it's used in which section of the code. So essentially, provisional income includes just about everything that you can think of, plus the earnings on tax-free munis. Now, just to be clear, the interest on tax-free munis are not taxed. It's just that the income that's thrown off is included in provisional income. So depending on where we are, it could be 50% or it could be 85% taxable. Now, there are proposals in Congress that at certain income levels to make it 100% taxable or to exclude some high earners from receiving any Social Security. Now, this is ordinary income. And the problem, the real problem here is that once you turn Social Security on, the tax system changes, and we now are in the realm of the effective marginal rates. And these effective marginal rates are really vicious because the average person is under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act will have the tax torpedo or tax bazooka on certain areas, certain amounts of income. And generally speaking, on average, it's 49.5%. But not everybody is average. So I hate to say this, but it's true. With the tax bazooka, tax torpedo, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. It can go over 100%. Now, in the software that we use, it cuts off at 100% just so that we don't cause anybody to have a heart attack. But the truth mm-hmm. of the matter is, it can go over 100%, 150% is the max that I've ever seen of the tax torpedo. But I have read in the literature that it can go as 185% on some portions of your income. And the tax torpedo can occur more than one time. So this is really very dicey because all of a sudden the brackets are adjusted and you've got these other little brackets that squeeze in between. So income gets taxed at different rates. And now you go from marginal rates to effective marginal rates. And that's basically the dollar that you lose on the next bracket of income. But these are the effective marginal rates. And so they are quite steep. And so the software that we use creates a tax map, and it lets you see how your income is being taxed at these different differential rates. So the other aspect of it is that the system becomes illogical. And so income that might come through at a zero capital gain rate could be forced because of distributions from qualified sources might push that into a 15% bracket. And so the logic of what you think you know about taxes doesn't work because for convenience, we'll tell you what your bracket rate is, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're being taxed like that.
In looking at other areas subject to taxation in retirement income, well, I know we're going to talk in a moment about traditional IRA and 401k versus Roth IRA and 401k, but let's look at pensions, if you have one, interest-bearing accounts, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and dividends.
Well, pensions are going to be taxed at ordinary rates. Now, if you have a 457 plan, and that's usually municipality, state government, or county government, you can make voluntary contributions. And so the voluntary contributions are treated differently than the employer contributions, because whenever you make voluntary contributions to this, you have a basis. Which you would not have on an employer contribution. Interest-bearing accounts, that's ordinary. Income munis, as I indicated, are included in provisional income, but generally they are exempt from federal tax. It just depends on which state you live in. Many states tax munis as ordinary income. Some states do not. It's just which state do you live in, and how is that treated? In New Jersey, it is taxed. It's includable and taxed on your New Jersey gross income tax. As far as stocks, bonds, mutual funds, let's talk about mutual funds for a second. If it's over 1 year, it's usually capital gain. However, you can have what's called phantom income. That is, the fund manager is constantly buying and selling, and they may push out earnings, but you may not have owned the mutual fund. But nevertheless, you're still going to get taxed on the distribution. So this is something that you want to look at before you make a decision to buy a mutual fund. You want to look at the tax treatment, and when is the fund manager due to make a distribution. Now, you can't always game this, but it's worth taking a look at it. Otherwise, if it's less than 1 year, it's going to be ordinary income. Over 1 year, it's going to be starting at 15%. However, as I indicated earlier, if you're taking Social Security, and you're on the effective marginal rate system, depending on the distribution, it can put capital gains back. I repeat, capital gains can be transformed back into ordinary income, and that is a wider conversation. But for anybody that's interested, we can do a tax map, and we can show you how this actually occurs. So, as I said, the treatment, what Social Security really is vitally important in how it alters the tax system. It's not merely the 50 or 85%, it's the rest of what it does. So that's also a reason to consider seriously deferring Social Security. If you can possibly do that, and if you have other assets that can be used to bridge the gap between retirement or one spouse retiring and there's a reduction in earnings, there may be other assets that you can turn on, even if it's for a shorter period of time, and not start Social Security. So you can defer Social Security and defer being impacted by the effective marginal rate system. I think you mentioned dividends, and generally they're taxed at they're usually qualified or non-qualified dividends. Qualified get capital gain treatment. Non-qualified are taxed at ordinary income.
Well, let's look at a little bright spot here. Could be, and that's life insurance proceeds.
Well, you know, it's interesting that we're talking about life insurance. A couple of months ago, there was a heated exchange by guys that are known as annuity experts on LinkedIn, and one of the well-known individual, among advisors, insisted that all life insurance proceeds were income taxable, and there was a lot, there was a lot of cheering from the Me Too chorus for people who don't like life insurance, and that is absolutely incorrect. life insurance are life insurance proceeds, are uncoordinated. They are not coordinated with the equity market. So that's number one. The death benefit is an independent asset, uncorrelated to the stock market. Number two, the life insurance proceeds, whether it's paid to a trust or paid to a named beneficiary, are exempt from income tax, capital gains tax, generation skipping tax for people who want to generation skip. In other words, they they've left assets to their kids, they don't want to leave any more assets to their kids, and they want to leave assets to their grandkids or great-grandkids, so they can skip a generation and leave assets to their to their grandkids. And life insurance is not subject to inheritance tax either. So this whole idea, now, of course, trusts may be desirable. They may not be necessary. Historically, when the estate tax exemption was low, and where virtually every state had an estate tax, it made sense to leave life insurance to an irrevocable life insurance trust. But with the estate tax exemption being as high as it is, and even if it gets cut in half, most people are not going to reach $6-7 million. Two spouses could be $12-14 million. So there may not be a relevant need for a trust. Now, I'm not saying rush out and get rid of your trust. That's not what I'm saying. I'm simply saying it's worth discussing it, with a competent estate planning attorney, and to see whether or not it makes any sense, and then bring your advisor and your CPA into the conversation. Now, life insurance. Life insurance has a lot of uses. It could be done for legacy reasons. It can be used for tax-free distributions. Can be used as a ready source of capital at relatively low interest rates. Life insurance has a lot of uses. Could be used for long-term care, meet long-term care expenses. It can be used for a lot of purposes beyond just the replacement of family income. And certainly, the best life insurance is the one that you have in force on the day of death. It was the great Ben Feldman, who first uttered that statement. And it's still true. If you're young, then you probably want to buy as much term insurance as you possibly can. But as you get older, there may still be a need for life insurance, but the purpose is different. And if there's a permanent purpose, you may need permanent life insurance. Now, what form of permanent life insurance? That's a planning question. But I wouldn't, automatically say, well, I'm 65 years of age and I don't need any life insurance. So even if you have a lot of assets, the largest amount of life insurance is purchased by people who have very large estates and have enormous amount of assets. But the life insurance is less expensive than using their own capital, because you're going to buy life insurance at a discount. You're never going to pay 100 cents on a dollar. The money is going to be available when it's needed. And you don't have to worry, assuming you're using a quality company with a Comdex rating of at least 90, you don't need to be concerned that the company is going to disappear. And this can be very effective. And people who have life insurance tend to be more relaxed about spending because it covers the legacy, and also will create an asset for a surviving spouse besides Social Security, just in case. You never know. Life is, unpredictable. Mm-hmm. So you never know. You might be ill. You might need long-term care expenses. You may need home expenses. You may have to consume other assets. And there's a pristine life insurance policy that can be used. to provide an additional asset, and you want a legacy, survivorship, life paying at the second death, or there may be other considerations where you want a joint life payable at the first death. I mean, all of these things are, you know, have to be taken into consideration. And these are planning issues. A competent planner who's familiar with life insurance should be consulted. Now, not every planner is conversant with life insurance and doesn't use life insurance, doesn't recommend it. Now, may occasionally recommend a survivorship life policy, you know, as a legacy issue. But basically, they avoid the conversation. But it's a conversation that should be had.
Yeah, and we're actually going to get, we're going to move into Roth, and I'm happy to see we have a Stump the Guru question to get into, but I'll just mention how to reach out to Fred, talk about taxes, and talk about getting proactive in that area. That's where we're moving into. 800-593-8188 to schedule with Fred. 800-593-8188. In a moment, we'll tell you also how to get your Stump the Guru question to Fred. But let's go back to the Roth IRA. It goes back to 97, the Taxpayer Relief Act, yep. And its namesake, Senator William Roth of Delaware, behind this proactive tax strategy. So in looking at Roth versus traditional, with Roth, in a sense, you're really paying the taxes up front. Is that it?
Yeah, correct. You know, taxes are, as we've just indicated, taxes are a complicated subject, and there are a lot of uncertainties and imponderables. So if you believe that taxes are low now and they have no place to go but up, then it could make sense to you to deal with the tax issue right up front and pay taxes at a lower rate on conversion, because conversions have no income limit. Now, depending on you could, if you're eligible for an individual Roth or your plan has a 401k Roth, the rules are different. But Roths to me make an enormous amount of sense, because if taxes go up in the future, if there are further tweaking with the code or other changes, you will have already taken care of the tax. There's no required minimum distributions for you or for your spouse. Your heirs, non-spousal heirs, are required to empty an inherited Roth within 10 years unless they meet certain exemptions. But assuming that they don't, you have 10 years. They can wait the full 10 years and then take all the money out in year 10 to get to zero balance. I can't, you know, on a basic level, in my opinion, there's nothing better than the Roth. And yeah, Congress has done a lot to Rothify, if I can use that term. A lot of the options, because they're hungry, they're anxious to get that tax money up front.
A lot of that in Secure Act.
Yeah. Yeah. So far so good. You know, even if Congress says we're changing the deal, you know, all these, you know, IRAs or individual Roth, individual retirement arrangements, Roths arrangements. We call them accounts, but in the law they're arrangements. So Congress can, if it wants to, you know, change it. But normally they don't do something that they usually don't. Harm something retroactively. I can't say that with absolute certainty, because there have been instances where they've made changes retroactively. But generally speaking, for the most part, they don't. So is it better to get rid of the tax now at the lowest rates that they've been since the mid-1920s on the assumption that taxes are going to go up in some manner, some form? You know, every 90 days, the deficit goes up by $1 trillion. It's an untenable situation. The interest rate right now on the federal debt is greater than what we are spending on the Department of Defense. Now, I'm not talking about supplemental appropriations, but on the in the on the on the spending bill for the Department of Defense, it is higher. The debt, what we're paying on a debt, is higher. It's an untenable situation right now that we are facing, and we just have to do something to ratchet down on the spending. Now, most of our spending is demographically driven, and this is Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And we don't have any good solutions for these three issues, these three population-based expenditures. So with longevity increasing, the pressure is really on to raise revenue. Now, I would think that the Fed is under an enormous amount of pressure. You can think of it as pressure on coal, because if interest rates go above 5%, that makes it totally and completely untenable. The Federal Reserve is doing everything in its power, as you look at 20 and 30 year Treasury bonds, to keep those interest rates in the fours. This is just a matter of dollars and cents. I mean, it can run the printing presses, but that doesn't solve the problem. So, do you want to be in a situation where you are getting tax-free money in retirement? And this is very important, because if you have a mix of taxable, tax-free, and untaxed, you're going to have the possibility for the longest period of time of maintaining a relatively constant tax picture. And that also means that it will extend the longevity of your portfolio. So one of the things that we do is we look at what's your longevity, and what's your portfolio's longevity as a source of income. So let's say your longevity is 28 years, but if your portfolio can only last for 15, well, that's a problem. And this is not a matter just of switching spending and going here, there, moving things around. Even if you do that, maybe we can get two or three more years, but you're not going to get 27 years out of a 15-year portfolio. So these are things to consider. So when you are, I mean, you lose assets to taxes, and you lose assets to fees. I mean, those are the two things that you really want to crush down on to the maximum extent possible. Now, I'm not saying that everything that you should do you should do for tax reasons. No, I'm not saying that at all. But I am saying that taxes and fees have to play an important role in any consideration that you have. So the usual advice is to contribute to Roths or contribute to, 401ks, up to the employer match, and then move on. And that's pretty good advice, because there are other options beside that, and you want to think down the road. I mean, anything that you do now that will control taxes, your future self is going to thank you for doing that and not have to deal with the tax bomb later on. The effective marginal rates in Social Security, as I talked about earlier, is a lot to deal with, and to the extent that you can manage taxes and what's exposed to taxation is vitally important. And so these are things that should be considered right up front. Now, if at the end of the day you decide not doing this, I want to pay taxes, I'll worry about it later, then that's your decision. You've made a decision. You can change your mind, but you're stuck with you're going to be stuck with a lot of that decision, and having to pay taxes at a later point at an unknown rate. And to assume that taxes are going to be lower in the future, you can assume that. Nobody can tell you not to. But is that a good assumption to plan your retirement on the assumption that taxes will be lower then, and I'll worry about it when I get there? If you know, then you're trusting to hope and luck, and that's not a plan.
Mm-mm. No, but you certainly do need a tax plan, because as it's evident here, they're not going away in retirement, and Fred can talk about proactive tax strategies with you. This is back. Stump the Guru. Fred's got a question. Someone's trying to stump him, and we'll get into that question straight ahead.
Do you ever feel like you are fighting for financial knowledge? You can get a copy of our hot off the press 401k survival guide, or take advantage of a complimentary consultation valued at over $999. Contact Fred Sade at Money Matters USA, 800-593-8188, 800-593-8188.
We're back with Money Matters USA, the podcast, every week, and a fresh look at what we need to be considering in our financial lives, especially in that now longer phase, that's retirement. It's episode 135. I'll mention the website for several reasons, moneymattersusa.net. Now, Fred links you to the other podcasts there, so you can just listen on demand, scroll through the menu. You can also learn about the Red Light on the Dashboard program. Click that Red Light tab. If you would like to try to stump Fred, and that's something people have done successfully, but I have to tell you how they've stumped him. It's not like he couldn't answer it. It's like he had to do a little research to answer it better. So he calls that a stump, and he makes it worth your while. So you can submit a Stump the Guru question to Fred at Money Matters USA. If you click the podcast tab, you'll see the dropdown for Stump the Guru. Again, it's moneymattersusa.net. All right, Fred, here we go. Stump the Guru. We've got a question. It does come up a lot. The listener asks, what happens if I miss the 60-day rollover rule? I was told by my CPA that if you don't roll over your payment, it'll be taxable other than qualified Roth distributions and any amounts already taxed. And you may also be subject to additional tax unless you're eligible for one of the exceptions to the 10% additional tax on early distributions. So is there no workaround for this listener, or is there a workaround, Fred?
Well, first of all, I have to admit that this guy stumped me, because not that I didn't know the answer. I just had to go to the IRS website in order to get some of the links.
Okay, he gets a prize.
Yeah, well, he gets a prize.
Yeah, and the answer.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm assuming that the listener, the questioner, missed the 60-day rollover period, regardless of whatever the reason was, and the CPA's basic advice is accurate. It's correct. But the IRS does allow for exceptions to the 60-day rule. And there are three ways to obtain a waiver. You may qualify for an automatic waiver. An example may be if you were ill. If there was a death in the family, if there was a catastrophic weather event, as three examples, you can receive a private letter ruling. It will grant the waiver, or you can self-certify that you qualify for a waiver, or the IRS is doing an audit of your income tax return, and whoever is doing the examination has the authority to grant the waiver, so you don't have to ask for a private letter ruling. Now, the IRS has a ton of resources that you can get if you go to their website. I don't know if we can post my reply, but it has a lot of the links.
I can get a link on the on the podcast page.
Okay. Yeah. Now, just to be clear about this, there are 11 reasons why, if you fail to meet the 60-day rule, you can self-certify. And if it turns out that the late IRA rollover is denied after self-certification, the IRS does treat the rollover as the failed rollover as a taxable distribution, and they can assess interest and penalties for failing to report the distribution properly. There's a revenue procedure, 2016-47. I hate when people do this, but I have to do this. It gives the IRS agent the ability to grant the waiver during an examination, so you don't have to pay $10,000 for the private letter ruling. What I would suggest is review the links that I have here in my response, and then if you need a professional advice, you should obtain it. And by the way, the IRS provides model forms for you to use for your filing to request the waiver. So it is a fill in the blanks for you. So good luck on this. And again, if you meet the qualifications, you will get the waiver automatically.
Okay. And I can get those links wherever you land on the podcast, wherever you download your podcast, we'll make those links available there. But so, and again, I opened up because I knew that's how you do this, Fred. You call a stump if you have to do some research to better answer.
I wanted to get the IRS links, and I don't know them offhand, so I had to go to the IRS website. And I knew what to put into the website in order to make stuff comes in. And they have a very, very fine YouTube video. It's under 2 minutes, and it gives you a lot of information. So this is not end of the world as it may appear. In these qualified distributions, the IRS tends to be more lenient, if it can be, than in other areas. So it's, the world didn't end even if you failed to meet the 60-day, because the quick answer is, oh, you're in trouble. It's end of the world.
Right.
But that's not necessarily the case, and that's pretty much been the case. It's about 2016. And this has evolved over time. So this is Congress being more generous, more and more generous about how to deal with an issue. And look, people make mistakes. They forget about it. They think that the account that they opened at the ABC Savings Bank was a qualified account. They think that they now can do a trustee-to-trustee transfer. You can only do one IRA every 12 months. That's not calendar year. In other words, let's say you do a rollover in July. The 12-month period is to the following July. So it's 12 months from the date of the rollover. But there's no limitation on institutional transfers, trustee-to-trustee, institution-to-institution. You can do as many of them as you wish, as long as they make sense and they're appropriate for you and you would benefit from them. There's no limit on transfers. On rollovers, there is.
Okay, good information, and thank you for the question again. To get your Stump the Guru question to Fred, it's moneymattersusa.net, and click the tab where you'll be linked to the podcast. That's podcast, and you'll see the drop down for Stump the Guru. Congratulations to our listener stumping Fred. I always have to say, it's tough to stump Fred on this stuff because he's He's good at it. He has a lot of knowledge in it, but it's fair for him to say, if I've got to do some research, we'll call it a stump. So moneymattersusa.net. And as always, we appreciate you listening. Stay with us on our day of recording here, March 4th. We're looking forward to returning to daylight savings time, March 10th, and we're looking to tax season being over with. Well, for some people, it's never over, but for most people, it's over after April 15th. Thanks for following us, and stay with us on Money Matters USA.
Investment advisory services offered through Money Matters USA, LLC. Fred Sade and his guests provide general information, not individually targeted personalized advice, and are not liable for the usage of information discussed. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles should not be considered investment advice or a recommendation to buy or sell in any of these financial vehicles. This information should also not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with a professional specializing in the fields of tax, legal, accounting, or investments regarding the applicability of this information for their situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Investments will fluctuate, and when redeemed may be worth more or less than when originally invested. Any comments regarding safe and secure investments and guaranteed income streams refer only to fixed insurance products. They do not refer in any way to the securities or investment advisory products. Fixed insurance and annuity product guarantees are subject to the claims paying ability of the issuing company and are offered through Money Matters USA, LLC. By contacting Money Matters USA, you may be provided information regarding the purchase of insurance products.